I wanted to share my conversation with the wonderful Sue Foley now. You may have seen her when WMNF brought her to Heatwave some years ago. Pinky is the name of her Pink Paisley Fender Telecaster guitar, and it has now inspired this entire album, Pinky's Blues. Sue has said it's like she has a bond with the instrument, and I was struck by her description of a relationship as if Pinky is a living being. And I said to Sue, it's almost like you don't tell Pinky what to do. You have a conversation with her. And I asked her to talk about that.
You're actually really accurate. It's like a friendship. I mean, I've had that instrument since I started my career as Sue Foley. I saw that Pink Paisley Telecaster at the music store, and I was living in Vancouver at the time. And I just remember thinking, I have to have that. I have to have it. I didn't know why, but it just felt like fate. I knew I wanted something that sort of defined my look or defined who I was, and I was trying to find myself. I went on tour after that, and we started working on the road, and then we worked on the road a lot all through my 20s and even into my 30s, but mostly in my 20s, I was on the road a lot. We really almost had no home at the time sometimes. We would just be touring and touring and recording, and that guitar ended up on every album I made through this latest album. When we were going into the studio, Mike Flanagan, our producer, the great Hammond B3 organist from Austin here, he said, you know, you should just make a guitar album. You've had this guitar your whole career. And then I made that instrumental and he goes, let's call that Pinky's Blues because Pinky is such a part of you. So it really is. And, you know, you spend so much time with one instrument, like a lot of guitarists, they like to have a lot of guitars. And I just have had that one. For the longest time, that's all I would bring on the road. I never even had a spare. If I broke a string, the show would stop and I'd change the string and it was part of the show. And I've lost her on airplanes a few times and she's always come back. And after a while, you play so much on it, it's a profound sort of relationship. You really feel the instrument and it really becomes a part of you.
You talked about wanting to find yourself and being on the road for years. And it is as if as you became Sue Foley, the one constant in your life was Pinky.
Exactly, right? And it's true. And we figured that out with this album. It was kind of like, yeah, you're right. The one constant. I've been the longest relationship in a way. but it's a profound relationship. I've got another couple of Pinkies now and I play other guitars all the time. But when I come back to that one, it really still has this, there's a vibration that gets into it and a soul that gets into it. And that's sort of undefinable.
Your father and your brother were guitarists. Did they ever think that a white female from Canada could have a career as a blues guitarist?
I'm not sure anybody thought that. And it wasn't till Clifford Antone here in Austin. He was the head of the famous nightclub Antone's, which is still around. And he kind of championed me down here and said, you know how to play blues. I don't know why you know how to play blues, but you understand it. I think blues is just one of those things that gets inside of you. And if you can't really let go of it, it takes a hold of you. It doesn't matter who, like, for instance, Peter Green is one of the greatest blues guitar players on record. And he was from England. You just never know. Or Van Morrison, I consider Van Morrison one of the most soulful blues artists out there, even though he's not defined as a blues artist. He's got blues in everything he does. And he's from Ireland. So I think blues is just one of those things that's in the air. And if it gets into you, look out.
You mentioned Clifford Antone, and it does sound that he is one of the reasons that you were able to develop the career you did. Would you talk some about Antone's and him and how it was so important in your development?
Oh, yeah. We take a lot of things for granted now, but when Stevie Ray Vaughan broke through in the mid-80s, blues was kind of not super on anybody's radar. And he kind of brought it back on the radar and really breathed this new life force into it. And it came out of Austin. It was a Texas sound, but it was also specifically an Austin, Texas sound. It was something they developed here in Austin. And it's a mixture of a lot of different styles. If I went into the nuts and bolts of it, it might take me a while to actually explain exactly what it is. But something happened in Austin, Texas, and there was a blues thing, and Clifford Antone was really a big part of that because he opened a nightclub where all the blues artists could play. Up until that time, I think they were kind of kicking around town playing these different venues, but there was no real defining venue that said, hey, and he just put a stamp on it and he said, this is the home of the blues. Like Clifford Antone really championed blues music in Austin, and he brought down all the people. He looked for every guy and woman that was alive. A lot of these artists, their careers weren't flourishing at the time. Like people like Muddy Waters or Jimmy Reed, or they were still alive. And these are the giants of blues, and he knew that. He sought them all out one by one, made friends with them, brought them to the club for weeks at a time sometimes. And it was really his mission to put these young artists, these young up-and-comers, these basically young hippie kids in Austin up on stage with these legends. And that really was the impetus for, when you see those old videos of Stevie Ray Vaughan and Albert King jamming, well, that's what Clifford Antone did. He facilitated that. He brought Albert King down and he said, man, you got to hear this kid, Stevie. And he did that with everybody. And he did that with me. I was the next generation. By the time I got here, Stevie Ray was already gone on to great fame. And in fact, the year I got here, he passed away. But Clifford put me on stage with everybody that was still around, from Albert Collins to Buddy Guy to, geez, every blues legend that came through the club. And there was a lot. Hubert Sumlin, the great guitar player for Howlin' Wolf, and Jimmy Rogers, Pine Top Perkins, Snooky Prague, could go on and on, Earl King. I was in heaven. I was young and I was very impressionable. And this was really an important education. Like, you can't get that education anymore, obviously, because everybody's passed away. And he not only did that for me, he did that for everybody. And he just kept doing it. And he passed away, in the early 2000s. But his mission was really focused. And he made a huge difference in this town and in blues music and in all of our lives, for sure.
You've said that you learned everything hanging out at Antone's, as much off stage as on. What is it that you learned just hanging out and watching musicians interact?
What I love, and what I really still love about the idea of blues music, is that it's the music of the people. It's not affected by commercialism, and it's not to say it can't be commercial. Blues is infiltrated everywhere, but what I learned is these were just people. I mean, they're just really down-to-earth people, real people, and their music had a personality, and that was their personality and their stamp. And that was really important, to be yourself and to know who you were. But just watching everybody hang out and talk, when the Antones would have, every year they had an anniversary in July, they still do. Clifford would bring everybody to town. Some of those old anniversary posters you'd see, Albert Collins, Buddy Guy, and all these guys and women in one week at the club. It was just really dense with legends. And I really liked hanging out, watching them talk and relate to each other and joke and just be really normal with each other. Driving around in a car with Otis Rush or something, you'd be like, I can't believe I'm driving in a car with Otis Rush. And this happened, this stuff really happened. And it was really cool. They were just neat, interesting people.
It's funny, on the one hand, I said, who thought that some white girl from Canada would become this blues guitarist for her career? But on the other hand, it sounds like what you're telling me is that because you felt the blues and because you could play, you didn't have to prove yourself. You were welcomed.
Yes. That's another thing that is interesting, which it should be with music in general, is there are no barriers with music. There are no colors. I don't believe any of that. I think when you get on stage and you can play, people close their eyes, and if you could hold your own, they were fine. They didn't care if I was a little white girl from Canada. They weren't like giving me a bad look or trying to cut me down, or they're just like, hey man, if you're up here, good. Hang out. If you can't handle it, we'll let you know. We won't have to say anything to let you know. You will know if you can't handle it. And I was able to hold my own. And I figure if I was able to do that and they were okay with it, I feel pretty good about it.
Pinky's Blues is the first time you recorded an entire album live. What did that give you that previous recording experiences didn't?
Well, it gives you the freshness. Blues performance is really improvised, and it's similar to a jazz performance. We're playing off of each other in real time. And so what you're hearing on this album is really in the moment. We hadn't been playing at the time because we recorded this in 2020 and we weren't seeing each other all that much. So I hadn't really fleshed all these songs out. I wasn't on the road. We weren't touring. So we got into the studio and we were just kind of like, here's the song, let's play it. So it really has this freshness to it where it's, even I didn't know where it was going to go. It's much more like seeing us on stage and feeling our energy and that we're listening to each other and we're making it up in that moment.
I want to ask you about the song Dallas Man. You've said there was a specific Austin sound, which was different, I take it, from a Dallas blues sound.
Yes. Yes, it certainly was. But there was a lot of the guitar players in Austin were from Dallas. The Vaughns, obviously, they're from Oak Cliff, Dallas. Denny Freeman's from Dallas. Jericho Bryan was from Dallas. Doyle Bramhall's from Dallas. There was a lot. Anson Funderburg's from Dallas. There's just a lot. And then there was a historical Freddie King and T-Bone Walker, other people that floated through Dallas, Blind Lemon Jefferson and that. So that's why I wrote Dallas Man. I just thought that whole area kind of has a mystique of like, what the heck was in the water there that all these badass guitar players came out of there? It's got a real history. Little Son Jackson, Frankie Lee Sims, there's so many of them.
You mentioned Frankie Lee Sims. Part of the song is inspired by his playing specifically.
Well, yeah, it was a tune I was trying to figure out by him and I kind of got stuck and I couldn't quite find his method. And then I just came up with my own version of it. And that's the lick we have in Dallas Man. That's another thing that I was writing about Dallas Man was that there's sort of an undefinable, we can't quite get it because they kind of did their own thing, you know? And it's the same with like a guy like Jimmy Vaughn, who I love dearly. And I watch him play all the time. I'm friends with him. I've played with him, and I'm not trying to be Jimmy Vaughn or play like Jimmy, but there is something about what he does that's not, you can't get it. That's his own thing.
Is that line, he's got a little secret, he don't show his hand?
Exactly. Yes. I mean, listen to Stevie Ray Vaughan. There ain't nobody plays like that. And there's a boatload of guitar players trying to or have tried to and still trying to, but they can't get it. They'll never get it. Because they can't. They can't get inside Stevie's brain. You can't get inside Jimmy Vaughn's brain. I don't know. There's just something undefinable. I mean, and you could say that about a lot of people. It's not just Dallas, but that was a tribute to those guys. And I just love them so much.
Sue Foley with Dallas Mann from her new album, Pinky's Blues. She'll be bringing Pinky to Skippers this evening.